September Zone 3. Okay.
Take two.
All right. So it is 6:30. I will go ahead and call the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for September to order, and I think we'll start with a roll call.
Member Lee.
Here.
Chairman Talley.
Here.
Member Barnidge.
Here.
And Member Brunet.
Here.
Okay. All right. With that, I'll open it up to public comment for anything that's not on the agenda. Do we have anybody that would like to speak?
Nice to be here again. I'm Shane Taylor, Utilities Manager for the City of Roy Grande. The reason I came is I wanted to introduce you to our new Public Works Director, Mr. Bill Robeson. A lot of you are familiar with him. He's from County of San Luis Obispo for 23 years, I believe, in the Planning and Building Department. So we're excited to have a new leader, and I wanted to introduce him, and he'll become intimately knowledgeable, hopefully, over the next few years and how the advisory board works and the technical advisory committee and all things to do with Zone 3. So come on up, Bill.
Thank you, Shane.
Thank you, Shane. Is this on? Yes. Yes. I thought I should probably talk after Shane introduced me, so I'm here. My name is Bill Robeson again. I have been with the county for a long time. These are pretty familiar faces to me, but I'm very excited to be with the City of Rio Grande. I've raised my kids here. My family is here. My wife has had a business in the downtown area, so I'm really familiar with the city. What I'm finding out is the Public Works Department does a variety of things, and it's not just flood control or water. We took down a tree today that fell on South Halcyon, so I'm excited about the variety, and I'm really excited to work with you. So if you have any questions, I'll leave my card, and you can call me at any time, and I'll help you out. Thank you.
Well, welcome, Bill. Thank you very much for being here. All right. Is there any other public comment? And if there's not, I think we'll move on to approval of the minutes, which were distributed. And I'm going to assume that everybody had a chance to review them. I will let you know that even though I was not at the last meeting, I did review the minutes with Vardaketa. He had no corrections or amendments. So I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the minutes.
Okay.
Second.
All right. We've got the motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries. Moving on to the operations report. And we're going to hear about operations, reservoir storage, and downstream releases.
Yeah, so as far as the lake elevation goes, we are at 495.29 feet. The storage is 28,174 acre feet. Our capacity today is 57.3%. The rainfall today, which would be since July 1st of this year, is 0.16 inches. Our plant production is 4.5 million gallons per day. Our downstream release is 3.45 million gallons per day. And we, for state water, we have 0 million gallons per day. Any questions on that?
Any questions or comments?
No.
All right. Moving on to projected reservoir levels.
Okay. So Jill or David Spiegel has been giving this update. It's on page 9 of your packet. Would you like to go over this, Mark?
Oh, good. Certainly. So looking at page, Mark Hutchinson, Public Works Deputy Director. When we look at page 9, you can see our typical projection graph looking out until December 1st of this year. It looks pretty good. You can see the actual storage number staying above the 25,000 foot mark. That number is going to come in about 27.5. We're tracking pretty well on those projections. We're getting pretty good at this. The second line down there, you see the dashed line that says storage without carryover. Obviously, the green line at the top is wet water in the reservoir. storage were out carryover would point out that the water between those lines is what's in the accounts of the various agencies, which again the board by resolution I think last month agreed to carry over until at least the end of the current water year, which is March 31st. It looks good as far as it's going. No unusual bumps or anything like that. So we'll continue to track, make those projections, and then work with the TAC. With the number that we built up to with this last year's rains, this last winter's rains, which was about 60%, we continue to work very closely with the TAC in tracking that because, as you're aware, we went into the five-year drought at 84%. So 60% is not the number we wanted to see. So fingers crossed for this winter that we get some significant inflow and keep those numbers up. We are not yet claiming that South County is out of drought, as I think all of your cities are aware. So we're going to keep up the good work and keep our eye on it.
All right. Questions for Mark?
So just one question, Mark. At our last meeting, I believe it was Jim Gehring that talked about the inflow into the lake, and some of the creeks had dried up a couple months earlier than normal, I guess normal before the drought, kind of average rainfall year. Do you have any update at all on any of that inflow into Lopez? Or?
Well, just based on conversations with Jim, he's very familiar with the Royal Grande Creek,
right,
which loops around up behind the reservoir there.
Mm-hmm.
And based on Royal Grande Creek drying up, we also know that Wittenberg Creek, which is the one that flows in by Camp French, is also dry. Lopez Creek continues to flow. There's actually a USGS stream gauge right at the youth camp there that we track carefully. And it's, for this time of the year, within the averages, but nothing essentially special, although Lopez Creek, even during the drought, never stopped flowing entirely. Set some new low flow records, but didn't stop entirely. So given the composition of the watershed on Arroyo Grande Creek, pretty broad, flat with some alluvium, it's not unexpected that that creek would continue to flow after just one single year of rainfall in that watershed.
Okay.
So again, an indication that things are not normal in the Lopez Lake watershed. They're still on the dry side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that.
All right. Any other questions? Then let's see. With that, I guess we're going to move on to some information items, the fourth quarter budget status.
Yes, we have Christy Smith with Public Works Finance.
Hello. Good evening. Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance Division. I'm here tonight to provide you with the fiscal year 16-17 fourth quarter budget status report for Flood Control Zone 3. This report is through June 30th of 2017. At the end of the fiscal year, the expenses totaled 75% of the annual budget, leaving a balance of approximately $1.3 million. Of that amount, about $1.1 million will be carried forward into fiscal year 17-18 for ongoing efforts and projects. This results in an estimated credit back to the agencies of $237,400. In your packets, there are three graphs reflecting the budget versus the actual expenses for the year. The first graph displays routine operations and maintenance. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses were 91% of the budget, resulting in a savings of approximately $324,000. The second graph displays non-routine operations and maintenance. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses were 50% of the budget, resulting in a savings of approximately $411,000, which will be carried forward into fiscal year 17-18. The majority of this carry-forward amount is for the HCP efforts. The contract issue was resolved in early May, and work has begun to move forward again. Combined, the routine and non-routine O&M have a savings of approximately $735,500. Almost $500,000 of this will be carried forward into fiscal year 17-18, leaving an estimated credit back to the agencies of $237,400. The third graph displays capital outlay. At the end of the fiscal year, expenses were 31% of the budget, resulting in roughly $578,600 of savings that will be carried into the next fiscal year. This will be used to continue projects through completion. The majority of the carry forward amount is due to the pH suppression and scaling control project. All agencies are current on their payments, and the estimated credits for fiscal year 16-17 will be allocated to the agencies and mailed along with the second installment of the fiscal year 17-18 billings that are due January 1st, 2018. This concludes my report. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Moving on to the climate update. And Andrea, do you do the climate update?
I do. Okay, so according to the U.S. Drought Monitor, the Central Coast is still in the abnormally dry conditions, status quo. And then according to NOAA, for our temperature forecast for the month of September, we have above average temperatures for the Central Coast. And as far as precipitation goes, according to NOAA, we have equal chances of above average, below average, or average rainfall for this time of the year.
Bless you.
Sorry about that.
Yep.
Well, that's a safe prediction.
So, yeah, say that again.
It could be above average, average, or below average.
Wow, okay.
That's what that EC means right there.
Okay.
Thank you, Noah.
Yeah. So that concludes my climate update.
I think we're probably all keeping our fingers crossed for another wet year. Any other questions about the climate update? Okay. Moving on then, we are going to have a discussion of the AGP televised meetings on the consideration of an option for audio only. And I believe we're going to have a presentation about that related to a memo that was distributed.
Well, if you don't mind, I just wanted to give a brief update about some discussions that I had within the Public Works Department.
Okay.
And Nancy Castle from AGP Video is here, and I want to give her the opportunity to speak to you and answer questions. But as far as audio goes, I spoke with our in-house IT department, and they presented a couple of options. One would be to have an MP3 player that we could plug in to the output here. And then they could upload that onto one of our websites, which is what a couple of our committees do right now. A downside to that would be that for those who are trying to listen to the minutes and identify the speakers, each speaker would have to identify themselves before they speak, so they would know who's speaking, and that would be helpful, too, for myself and others who are trying to take notes and minutes. Another option would be to live stream with a camera. They have some cameras, but they're not like these cameras where they're going to be taking different angles. There would be maybe one camera mounted back there that would just do a wide shot of the committee, and then maybe one from back here, and they could upload that as well. They could also add the agenda item headings, which is what AGP Video does for us right now. They could do that. You would have to pay for overtime, for staff time, and so we're looking at about maybe half the cost per meeting if we had Public Works staff do that versus what AGP Video is charging right now. But you don't get the different shots, and you know, the quality might be a little bit different. And that could also be uploaded to YouTube. But at the moment, the county website does not have the capability to live stream or to upload videos straight to that website. The website that we could upload audio to is our slowcountywater.org website, which is it's served by a different server than the county website is. So do you have any questions about that before we have Nancy come up? Okay.
I guess the question I have is, so Andrea, do you use the basically the video for the minutes?
I do. The video is on, and of course I'm listening to the audio, but I'm not necessarily watching the video. You know, I minimize the screen and I listen to the audio.
but I'm familiar enough with the committee members that I don't need to, you know, necessarily look at the nameplates. But if I'm not the one doing the minutes, or if I'm a member of the public, I may not know who is speaking.
And then you said basically half the cost. How much is that?
We're looking at roughly about $300 for staff time, depending on the length of the meetings. It would include travel time here, the duration of the meeting, and then uploading the audio or video to the website back at the office.
And I think we have 6 meetings a year?
Correct.
So it's a savings of $1,800, basically.
Correct. But I did, in talking with IT staff, they did say that the amount that you're currently being charged at $750 a meeting, that sounded pretty reasonable to them.
Okay. Any other questions before Nancy comes up? And
I did have one question, and may direct directly relate to what Ms. Castle's going to speak to us on. But who uses the video besides staff to do the minutes? I mean, do we have any way of tracking how many members of the public are eagerly listening to this broadcast?
I'm sure Ms. Castle can answer that, but she and I did have a discussion on the telephone, and I think they are getting viewers on the website, and that's she's able to measure that better than viewership on TV.
I just have one question, Andrea. So the cheapest we could do it for is about $300
with video.
With video. Oh, with video.
Yeah, I mean, without video, I could bring an MP3 player to the meetings myself and just plug it in and take it back with me and hand it to IT, and they could upload that on our SoCountyWater.org website. However, I must say that particular website may only be around for another 6 to 12 months.
And so then if that website goes away, then where would the audio be uploaded to?
By that time, we hope that the new county website would have the capability to we could upload audio or video to that website. It's a brand new website, and we're still working out the kinks, and we've put in some requests such as that for advisory committee meetings so people can come and watch them and listen to the audio. But that's still a ways out.
Okay, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I do have one question, too. At the last meeting when we discussed this, I think it was kind of mentioned, did we have anybody from the public reach out regarding?
I did not hear from anyone.
Okay, I was just curious.
There wasn't a public uproar.
I was waiting.
That's good.
But Nancy might have some suggestions as to that, too, because, like I said, she and I did speak about this.
Actually, and this generated one more question. I apologize. So, Andrea, can you tell us, so what other committees do you have that are Brown Act committees that don't have video or do have video?
So there's the RAC, Water Resources Advisory Committee, and that's comprised of a lot of members, and that falls under the Brown Act, and they do audio only. That's one that I know of. I think that might be. That's all I can think of right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, and with that, I guess we'll hear from Ms. Castle. Thank you for your patience.
Perfect timing. I just got here, and I was looking for a pen. I don't know if I can talk without a pen in my hand, but I'll do my best. Hi, Kristen. A little bit of history. Bill Rabinow was president of Zone 3 back 2005-ish, and we just started covering the Pismo Beach meetings. And there was a lot going on with the rebuild of the plant and this sort of thing. So it seemed like a real good thing to bring those meetings to the public in multiple times. And at that time, cable truly was king still. The meetings were actually, as I noted in my memo, were played in all of the different cities that had TV channels, which would have been Arroyo Grande, Pismo, and Grover. But it was also recognized that there was a lot of the service area for Zone 3 that was outside of the cable range. And so as we started picking up skills at presenting things on the internet, we just started doing it for Zone 3. You know, we never renegotiated, or I don't know, my partner Steve may have talked with Bill, and it seemed like a good idea. It was a post-production thing, and for those of you that actually read the whole memo, I have a little bit of egg on my face because we don't stream them live, and there is a charge that we charge other agencies for meetings we stream live locally. And, you know, I was working the amount of money we charge for your meetings and the services you're actually receiving, that in all of the other jurisdictions that have come up after you have been broken down into segments. So, and when my partner Steve and I were talking about this, he was reluctant that the charge for the wireless card to do the live streaming was a little bit over the top, was pushing the numbers a little too high. So, you know, it works out that we actually aren't doing that, so that's not a fee that we might consider adding on top of what we're already charging. So what we're doing is currently is we're coming and videotaping, and I want you to realize that we supply additional equipment. I did put this in the memo. This laptop you're using, we brought that in. We can connect to the projector here in this building, but there isn't a laptop to be used. Arroyo Grande is the same situation. We can connect to the projector, but there isn't a laptop, so we provide the laptop. So if you were to eliminate our contract, you would need to supplement that equipment if it's necessary at each meeting, if you have PowerPoints. In Oceano, we supply the screen, the projector, and the laptop. Pismo, it varies. Sometimes it's just the laptop. Sometimes we need to bring a projector as well, and possibly a screen in that location. So there's been an addition of services necessary to facilitate your meetings over the decade we've been providing services. I don't have numbers about what the viewership is on the internet. I asked in the office today, and I didn't get a result. Regrettably, I think they're probably disappointingly low, because in many ways, this service and this opportunity that is provided to the public is the world's best-kept secret. So my suggestion to Andrea today is that either the county, she puts out a press release. We put out a joint press release. AGP and Zone 3 are really pleased to offer this service. You can find out what's going on. You know, particularly after Oroville, people are getting, when the rains start, they may be more interested in what's going on with the local reservoirs and dam systems. And I think that some promotion done that this is available would bring more viewers in, because we find, you know, we do a lot of meetings for the state of California, the Coastal Commission. You know, there are so many people who know that we provide this service, that they're watching in the thousands. The other thing that I know happens is the journalists. The journalists adore us, because all of the people who used to have to come to all of these meetings and sit here can now be at home and watch it and review it and be sure they're reporting whatever information is discussed appropriately. So, you know, as I rather snarkily noted, that it's a very tiny amount of your budget to have our services, to know that when everybody walks into the meeting, anything that's needed to run that meeting is going to be in working order there and in working order. That, you know, certainly public works staff might have a laptop around they could bring in. I don't know. And I think that more promotion is definitely needed, that these meetings are available. You know, there were times, I think, when Bill was on, everybody knew Bill was on TV. And so, you know, we do this as a for-profit business. The guys in the back are really grateful for the payroll check. But we also do it because we recognize it's a huge service to the community. Because the more information that is available, the more people can come to the table with knowledge. I mean, that was when we first started doing countywide meetings, supervisors and planning commissions. James Caruso and I were having a conversation, and he said, since you guys have been doing it, the level of conversation starts at a much higher point. They don't go, oh, I heard there's a development going on down the road. They come in saying, I know about this development, and I don't like condition 37 and 38. Can we talk about those? So it's civics 101 in many ways, and, you know, with the changes that happen in your jurisdiction and that you deal with, visual information, I don't know, it looks like you had a PowerPoint. You can't do that on audio, you know. And today's culture is about seeing and knowing. So that's my pitch, and if you have any questions.
Well, thank you for your comments, and so I'll open it up to questions.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Recently, the video portion of a meeting in Pismo was, Yes, and I don't know how to turn this on.
I think it's on.
Is it already on? There's no red light or anything. How's that? It's on? So we had to rely on, when I had someone ask me for the video of the meeting, we had to rely on the audio. And do you provide the audio for Pismo?
No.
Okay.
And we don't provide the video either. We used to.
Yeah, I thought you still did. You
but
don't.
That's, KCBX has, a small thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. The audio was horrible.
Uh-huh.
You could barely, I mean, I'm just being honest, it was just, you could hear every third word, and so yours, if I remember, was always pretty clear.
We do our best.
Okay.
You know, occasionally somebody doesn't speak on their microphone and you can't hear them. And, you know, this is a pretty scary business to be in, because one connector can make the whole thing go cattywonkas.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it was noted on our website that we had the video up as well as the audio. And actually, that's just a service we've done across the board. In every jurisdiction that we provide services, we put the audio up.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they've hired us to put up video as well. For instance, in the city of Morro Bay, where we started, they're doing a YouTube thing. That may change. But every single meeting we ever recorded is up there on audio. And that's 20 years of Morro Bay meeting. And we do all of their Brown Act meetings, too. But you haven't gone that far in every jurisdiction. So, yeah, our aim is to have it as easily understood and accessible for everybody.
That brings up one question. I watched the Grover Beach Council meeting with the marijuana workshop that was here, and the audio was horrible.
Well, that gets into a bit of a sticky wicket, because we aren't responsible for the audio in
this
room. And there's been discussions going on of rebuilding the system, and the city is right now talking with Bob in the back there about what the best ideas are.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, a lot of the equipment that's in the older buildings is 90s equipment, and it's been turned on and off thousands and thousands of times, and it's breaking down. So, we do our best, but...
So is the audio the same audio that I listen to for the Grover Beach workshop? Is that the same audio that if people are listening now, it's the same?
It is.
Is it always like that? I mean, I've never watched a Grover Beach. Sorry, no offense, Jeff. I've never watched a Grover Beach council meeting until I watched that. And I really wanted, the information was really good information. I was so frustrated.
Truly. Yes, we are working, Bob Lloyd with AGP Video. We are working close with the city to improve the quality of the sound area. It's a lot of money to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And so we are trying to get, trying to get the maximum amount for what we can do. So it's a lot of review as far as what we're going to put in here.
Okay.
But, you know, Nancy's absolutely right. They're actually 25-year-old pieces of gear back here, and they've been running a long time. So we have hums and noise. And so the toughest thing about television is radio. If you don't hear it, you know, you don't hear it, it's...
Yeah.
You don't get the sense of the thing. So we do our best to try to EQ it, but we are kind of a left to work with what we have to work with.
Okay, so it's not your audio. It's wherever you are, whatever venue it is, you're using
exactly.
the same audio. Okay.
And that's some of the talent that we have here that we are able to adapt to different systems because they're all different and they're not all the same.
Okay.
Other questions? All right. Go ahead, Marcia.
So as the meetings rotate, you can go into each facility and record the meetings? Like, I think we have Oceano, Pismo.
Oh, yeah. We actually provide services in Oceano, here in Grover, and in Arroyo Grande. We don't in Pismo, but there's arrangements made that we can come in and we're familiar with the room. You know, I'd even go out on the limb that if this Grover's audio isn't rebuilt by next meeting, we might bring an audio system in just to guarantee you guys will have clean audio, you know, because that's I can understand the concerns. So.
Okay. Are we ready for comments?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So when we first talked about this, at our, I don't know if it was our last meeting or the one before that. It was the last meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that there was a lot of, you know, good questions up here, but I think this was a good exercise to bring this forward so we can ask the questions, understand how it works, how are people accessing it, where exactly is it uploaded, et cetera, all of that. So, but I think I'm ready to just move forward because I think that the cost of what it is per meeting is, Ms. Castle brings up a good point that I didn't really think of until now are the PowerPoints. And if you're just listening to it, you can't see that. And sometimes our PowerPoints sometimes are, they really help me sort of visualize what people are explaining. So, you know, the $300 versus the $750 versus the free, if we do the kind of Mickey Mouse, you know, MP3 player, I just kind of think that we're sort of getting down into the weeds, and I think that it's a good use of funds, and I'm ready to move forward as we were. Thank you.
And maybe just a point of clarification. I guess if we're just going to continue as is, there's no action required, right?
No, and this was just an informational discussion item.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Other comments?
Well, I'm a big proponent of public access. I think it would have been great during the drought. I think your viewership would have been higher because I had several conversations with people, about some of the details that are discussed here. So, you know, and I agree with the, you know, if we do decide to do this, that, you know, maybe making it more known and maybe we're asking the cities to, you know, make it, you know, publicize it a little bit. So, because I do think there is public is educating themselves, and this drought, I think, put a, for the most part, not everyone, but I think this drought really caught people's attention, and there's an interest in water and the status of the water in this area, so I would like to make the information available to them.
Okay. I'm going to tend to agree with all the comments that have been made so far and the fact that, yes, more public access for folks is beneficial. To go back to the Grover Beach Council Chamber disparaging noise for a second, I believe we do have a capital project this year to actually improve our sound system. So as Ms. Castle mentioned, if it's not done by the next time we have a meeting here, perhaps AGP could bring in some of that and kind of show us how well that would represent the room. We haven't had a number of public here, but if there is, whether it's the journalists or whether it's college kids doing a research paper or whatnot, or just members of the public who are interested, I think that provides a service. And then if we do have a controversial subject come up and the public does want to be here, then they'll be able to see that as well. So I'm in the majority here willing to move forward as is.
And, Jeff, I think that last point that you made I thought was something I was thinking about, too, is, yeah, maybe right now, you know, not a whole lot that the public would want to be engaged with, you know, as far as coming to meetings, or but that could change, you know, at any minute. Which, going back to the accessibility, I also think, personal opinion, but, you know, in this, you know, technology age that we're in, you know, there's a little bit of responsibility, I think, from a governmental perspective to provide that, not only audio, but video, you know, the internet, being able to go to a website. I mean, I kind of think that's basic, you know, so I think being able to have that and provide that and continue that going forward, I think it's a smart decision, I think.
I will share with you that Jim Gehring actually reached out to me before the meeting and thought, as pretty much everybody here has expressed, that we should continue on with this. You know, and I will also acknowledge I was the one that brought this up. And I happened to be here at the time when Bill Rabinall actually started this program. And, you know, I'm glad we had the conversation, and it sounds like there's a strong consensus that it's a good program for the public. So with that, I think we're done with this, and we're probably going to move on to hearing about the spillway. Thank you.
Thank you. Move all my stuff. So, Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director, County Public Works, again, with a quick data update on the Lopez Spillway. We included more than the average amount of information in your packet, letters and attachments from DSOD, so you can actually have the actual language in their requirements and little information from them on the whole program that they've been putting out, and a very nice list of everybody else across the state that's also doing spillway assessments, not just Lopez Lake. The update from the last time we talked, and last time it was about the requirement to do a spillway assessment. So we've actually included the required work plan in the back of the item there that has been submitted to the Department of Safety of Dams, describing what we propose to move forward with. We have not yet heard back from DSOD. They sent out their deadlines in phases, and I think we're a month or two behind some of the other 93 facilities that have submitted work plans. It's important to note that we did work with our own staff and also with John Hollenbeck to get an outside, more independent voice, if you will, in the civil engineering community. And one of the first things to do was get our engineers out to the dam. Now, backing up a little bit, DSOD in the last couple of months has been out to the dam. Did their annual inspection, didn't note any emergency immediate repairs that need to be made. Mr. Hollenbeck and our own staff have repeated that exercise. Our own inspections, while we don't have the expertise of looking at hundreds of dams a year, we do have the advantage over DSCD of having the detailed design plans and construction drawings and all of the design plans and construction drawings from the upgrade that was done in 2000 through 2003. So perhaps our own engineers, when they look at the dam, are doing it with X-ray vision. They also did not note any immediate repairs that need to be done to the facility. There's no outstanding issues that would cause us to rush into an emergency program and get ready, hopefully, for a spill this year. So what this work plan talks about doing is actually bringing in an outside engineering firm with expertise on dams, having them repeat a little bit the exercise we did, which is go through our design plans and all of our construction documents, and then some specific things that we want them to look at as far as the relationship between the spillway and, I'll call it, the native material that it's built into, and compare that to engineering, modern engineering standards. And then there are a couple of minor issues at the spillway that we've noted. There's a lifted slab up in the flat section. I was going to say the counterfort section, but I have to put up a a diagram to explain what all of these pieces are. Not that, I mean, this is something I got to learn over the past few months as well, but up under the bridge, the section of the floor in one slab is lifted up about 3 inches in the center of the spillway above the downstream slab below it, and it's been that way for a couple of decades. So past inspections haven't noted as an emergency, but in light of Oroville, we're suggesting we take another look at that. And then a key issue with the Oroville spillway was the non-functioning of their drainage system. Our system was built without any inspection reports. Those were added in the retrofit 17 years ago. So we actually have video, if you care to look at it, of a little tractor going through a pipe. Very interesting. Of the conditions of those things. And we can get into the majority of them, but not all. So one of the questions for the outside engineering firms would be, should we add more ports? And then some minor issues with concrete spalling here and there. But the big thing is, how well is that spillway really anchored into the mountain? The engineering's design from the 1960s followed the book at that time on how to build a spillway on that kind of soil. It's obviously functioned since then without any issues at all, but it's something to be looking at. From another perspective, I guess we could say that, you know, our spillway was engineered to the top standards of the day in the 1960s. It was looked at in 1990 and 91 compared to the standards of the day then, and upgrades were put in place in 2000. So we have a record of looking at the spillway every, say, 25 years or so and comparing it to current standards and current conditions. The last major analysis was 26 years ago, so it's a good cycle to take a look at it again. Interestingly, about a week after we submitted that work plan, the Oroville Spillway Independent Forensics Team, which is a group of experts appointed by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is the dam safety group from the federal side, came out with their interim report on Oroville. It's pretty brief, and it focuses on the mechanics of the failure of the concrete spillway. But it ends with a discussion of where they're going next, which is to be looking at what they call the organizational factors and human factors relative to how the facility came to be built the way it was and then maintained the way it was. They suggest in there that the annual visual inspections, which have been the standard for 50 or more years, are insufficient to... Potentially insufficient to ensure the safety of a spillway and a dam to the degree that it ought to be. And they suggest periodic, extensive reviews by an independent panel of experts that becomes familiar with the design plans, the construction plans, and the annual inspections, which is essentially exactly what our work plan suggests doing and what the county, the district in Zone 3 did back in 1990-91. So we think we're right in the center of where we need to be with that. So the next step is on the spillway examination is to get feedback from DSOD on the details of the work plan, get that confirmed by them, and then convert however that comes out into a request for proposals and get some quotes and then come back to the TAC and to your committee and talk costs. Right now we're hesitant to advance any kind of numbers because it's not at all clear where this would go. We've been in contact with the City of San Luis Obispo that manages Whale Rock and Monterey County Water Resources that manages both Nacimiento and San Antonio. They've submitted their work plans but have not got the final go-ahead back from DSOD, so we're not sure where the state's going on sort of degree of specificity or how that relates to cost. So the biggest update beyond the spillway is we received two more letters from Department of Water Resources concerning the Lopez Dam and then the Terminal Dam. And the Terminal Dam is the one at the water treatment plant that holds back the terminal reservoir. based on new legislation that was signed into law. It was in the omnibus bill, you know, the one at the end of the session where they toss in everything that they want to get done before midnight. Buried deep in there is amendments to the California Water Code. And I left the details is in your staff report. But they've done a couple of things. One, they've decided that inundation maps, which we have for Lopez, would show the area that would be flooded if the dam were to fail completely, and also show travel time, how long would it take for the water to get from the lake to different points downstream, need to be updated no less than every 10 years in case there are changes in the watershed and population downstream and whatnot. So the Lopez inundation map dates from 1999. It was well done, but that's more than 10 years. So we have folks in my office working to connect with the appropriate consultants who now have the new modeling software necessary to produce a modern inundation map. We don't expect any significant changes in what it shows, but it'll be brought up to date per state standards. So we have to update inundation maps for both Lopez and for the terminal reservoir. Those both currently exist. The other thing is the states and the same legislation has decided that all dams need to have an emergency action plan. And obviously Lopez does, but the Lopez plan is something called the Dam and Reservoir Failure Plan, and it lists and has action plans for all the reservoirs and dams across the county. And it's built to a state Office of Emergency Services standards. The EAP is a federal term, so you have to build that to FEMA standards because of that connection between the federal agency and the state. So we're going to work with our county OES to convert our dam and levee failure plan. We'll go in, pull Lopez plan out, reformat it as an emergency action plan, get that up to the state. The new piece is they want a separate EAP for the terminal reservoir, which really is just the same plan that you would have for Lopez, only less water. We hesitated to ask them if they wanted a third plan that says, well, what if they both go at the same time in the same big earthquake? We'll probably have that in our back pocket, though, because that's the kind of thing that our Office of Emergency Services likes to have at the ready. So we have staff going through that exercise. What else? Oh, the legislation also changed something called the I'll get back to it. And it's in your packet on page 20. The downstream hazard classification. And you've heard in the past that Lopez, up until recently, was considered a high hazard dam. And then there's always an asterisk that says it has nothing to do with the condition of the dam and everything to do with what's downstream. You know, how big would the disaster be if the dam failed? For reasons that escape me, the state decided to use the federal classification, which is low, significant, and high, and add another version on top called extremely high. And Lopez follows in the extremely high hazard classification because there's more than 1,000 people who live downstream within the limits of the inundation map. So nothing's changed about that other than I suspect that there'll be a bit more careful monitoring from the state side as the dam goes through years of operation. So no hard numbers to report, but everything, we met all the time frames, we're moving ahead. Nothing at this point that raises substantial alarms in our mind. So we're taking advantage of the opportunity to stay on top of the latest science and engineering as regards the facility.
All right, Mark, thank you. As always, very thorough. Any questions?
Mark, you said that, so the Division of Safety of Dams, they did their annual inspection. That's the same entity that we just submitted the work plan to. And so when they did the visual, I assume it's just a visual inspection, nothing was noted. So nothing different than in the years past from them during that inspection? Sort of business as usual when they were here during that inspection?
I wasn't able to accompany them on the inspection. The staff that were with them said they were a bit more, what's the word, agitated than normal, as you can imagine. And one of my engineers said I had to talk the one guy down four times. They're a bit shook up, as you can imagine, of the whole situation and whatnot. We recently completed an inspection and cleaning of the drainage system and also a repair, this is a bit technical, to a pipe we call Drain Zero. It runs up under the OG or the front lip of the facility, and that's been on the books to get done a couple of years. We thought there was a blockage in it, and we dug it up, and as it turned out, there was a blockage. There was an intentional plug, I think is left over from the retrofit, perhaps. That drain tends to flow water more than the others when the thing comes up. So they were pleased to see all of that was done. The recent cleaning was done. They left with copies of the videos showing the drains. I guess the interesting thing about the videos is that we found one collapsed drain that, rather than being blocked, has washed out a little pocket around there. So that'll be something we'll be looking closer at in conjunction with DSOD to see if that's something we want to get into and needs to be repaired or not. So as inspections go, it actually had a shorter list than we typically would see.
Okay, thank you for that.
Other questions?
Just had one question. With regards to the DSOD and DWR regarding the potential fixes, any discussion of either funding sources, grants, or other potential bills moving forward so that the local agencies don't have to foot the entire, or the potentially don't have to foot the entire bill?
It's interesting that we haven't heard anything from Sacramento about that. I don't think Sacramento has a good sense, or any of us have a good sense, of what the bill is going to be statewide and how that plays out to the different facilities. There was legislation that would have way up the inspection requirements and shifted all of the costs from the state to the individual dam owners. Somebody wrote that and introduced it. It did not pass the legislature. It was a little alarming to see that at this point. So, we haven't heard of any grant opportunities at this point. There is a new water bond out there working its way through the legislature, and there's always the opportunity for grants through state OES, the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. That comes up on us about every other year basis. We're watching that. At the same time, I'm looking around the room. Pismo Beach is here. If you're a state water customer, I've been doing mental calculations of the emergency work at Oroville, because that is a state water facility. They're up to about, if you spread it out over all state water customers, about $55 an acre foot. We haven't heard anything from DWR about passing that cost on to state water customers yet. But that's another one we're keeping an eye on.
Other questions? All right. Well, I think we're done with that item. Thank you, Mark. I think now we're moving on to capital projects update. Are you doing that too?
I am. That's me.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Andrea.
Okay, so the Turnout SCADA project is just about complete. It's expected to be completed next month. The equipment's been installed, and right now we're just waiting for the login process to be completed. So our IT division ran into a little issue with individual logins, and it's my understanding that agencies were okay with having one login and password, and they'll just click on their personal information for that agency. So that should be completed next month. The parking and roadway resurfacing project at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, the construction date was September 25th. It's my understanding our construction division has pushed that date back a couple of weeks, although the exact date is unknown at this time. And when we do have that date, we'll share it with staff and the Zone 3 agencies. The HCL tank for pH suppression is due to be completed in November, and that is involving the rental of hydrochloric acid tanks to replace individual totes that were having to be replaced several times a month by our Lopez Water Treatment Plant staff, and they would have to dress in hazmat suits to do that. So renting this tank will eliminate that, and the tank it's expected to be filled about once a month rather than having to refill the totes several times a month. We have three big projects that we just completed, one being the membrane strainer replacement project. The sixth rack addition would be the next one, and then the program logic control, the PLC replacement, and programming. The PLCs have been replaced, and the programming's updated. The equipment audit and replacement, that's an ongoing project. It's part of our 20-year outlook, and we want to be more proactive rather than reactive. So that had to be on hold for some other projects, but now that the three major projects have been completed, work can continue on that. So they'll just be inspecting replacement and taking note and beginning to budget for that equipment replacement. And Mark just went over the spillway assessment and the Lopez Dam. The terminal dam hazard classification, we're waiting for the date on that when that needs to be completed. So those are the projects that we've been working on, and then we have a list of upcoming projects. We have the Lopez Water Treatment Plant safety upgrades. We had a safety assessment completed at the plant. It's been about a year and a half, and during that assessment, some things were identified as far as equipment replacement to make the plant safer for workers. So we have funding for that now. We'll be making those upgrades within this fiscal year. So by the end of June, that should be completed, as well as the pressure transducers. And the pressure transducers have to do with the Turnout SCADA project. It has to do with the pressure and flow of water. And that will be done in-house by our water treatment plant staff. We also have the structural assessment of terminal reservoir, which is something that has been on the books for a while, but now it's associated with the DSOD assessment, so we'll be getting that done. And we have the cathodic protection survey, which is examining the water distribution pipeline and looking for any sort of corrosion. We'll be replacing the membrane feed pumps. Those need to be replaced, we're replacing one of those per year. The fault zone repair, the dam left abutment will be repaired. And then also we will be repairing our domestic and fire tanks. We had a diver go down into the tanks, and I guess a little rust was observed, so that will be repaired. We'll also be adding equipment storage at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, and then replacing the ammonia analyzer, which is a regular thing that we do. Any questions?
It's quite a to-do list.
All by the end of June, too.
Any questions? All right. Well, it looks like we don't have any action items. I guess future agenda items.
So the future agenda items that are on there are agenda items that your committee has asked to be placed on there. That fall update to the Board of Supervisors, again, has to do with our groundwater levels. So those will actually be measured next month in October. So after we have those measurements back, we'll be taking that to the Board of Supervisors, and then that will also relate to the LRRP, whether or not that remains in place or not. And the Lopez Lake Sayfield, I believe Member Lee was the one who wanted to put that on there. So.
Me too.
Okay. Member
Brennan? Me too.
Okay. And any other agenda items that you'd like to see on here?
No, but I have a question about the, so the groundwater levels will be measured in October. When were they last measured?
In April. So they're measured twice a year, in April and October.
Okay. So April, trying to think. So the rain had pretty much stopped, I mean, all the real heavy rain before that, right?
Right. And okay. And based on the measurements, it although it rained a lot, it really wasn't enough.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what it says now in
exactly.
October. Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
All right. So no other future agenda items? Then I guess we'll just move on to committee member comments. Do we have any comments? All right. Well, with that, I don't know if we need a motion to adjourn the meeting or we just adjourn it.
No.
All right. We will adjourn this meeting in exactly an hour. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Thank you.